Mike asked me to share with you guys this morning during our teaching time of the day. So he said, you can do whatever you want to do, but I'm doing parables right now, so if you want to do a parable, that's fine. So I thought, man, it's one of my favorite topics is a parable that I love, and so it's be great to maybe talk with you guys about it this morning. Before we get into that parable, I want to read some things to you. I don't want to say that I'm obsessed with money, but I like it, okay? And I don't know how the rest of you feel about that. Maybe you're obsessed, maybe you're not obsessed, but I like it. And so one of the things that perks up my ears when I hear about money is the wealth of Bill Gates. Like when I think about how much money this dude has, the kind of money he can spend, the things he does with his money, I'm always just so intrigued by it because it's numbers that I don't understand. You know what I mean? Like if you said, Jason, here's $100. Spend it. I'd be like, I can do that. If you said, here's $1 million. Spend it. I think before the end of the day, I could get that figured out. But if you said, here's $1 billion, that's a number that I'm not sure I know what to do with. I have never lived a life where that kind of money could be relevant to anything I even know how to buy. And this dude is worth $72 billion. And so, you know, I looked these up online, so they're true. These are some statistics about Bill Gates' money, that he's worth about $72 billion. If he lived for like another 33 years, he would have to spend $6 million per day for the rest of his life to run out of money. It says that here that he makes about $114 a second. And so if he's walking along and a $100 bill falls out of his pocket, he continues to walk and you see him and you try to give it back to him, that will be a total waste of his time. In fact, if he dropped a $1,000 bill and it took you 10 seconds to get it back to him, waste of time. That's how much money this guy is worth. He gives more money globally to health causes and humanitarian things than the United Nations does. Pretty unbelievable. I assume that's true from the internet. $1 million a year for his house taxes. Oh, and this one that I really love. If you took all the countries in the world and put them in order from the richest country, whatever country is worth the most, to the country that is worth the least in terms of monetary value, he falls at number 37 as a valuable country. Oh, it's real awesome. Now, why do I bring up money? Why do I bring up, because it perks my ears up. You know, certain things perk people's ears up. I do landscaping, and so, you know, I hear my friends are talking about, like, what Peyton Manning is talking about these days. And they're talking about, like, what's happening with the Patriots or what's happening with the Falcons. And I like sports. I like to watch sports. But, like, I do landscaping, so I'm like, checking the weather. Those are my stats. Like, yeah, the barometric pressure today. And they're like, what, you know, what's the matter with you? So I hear things that perk up my ears. Money is one of those things from time to time. And a lot of times the Bible gets criticism because it speaks a lot about money. But the Bible is also a social genius. It understands what we're wrapped up in. It gives us more insight into the world around us than I think a lot of times that we give it credit for. And so money is one thing that it's spoken of. And Jesus used a parable in Matthew. So if you want to get there, the parable that he tells is in Matthew 18. Matthew 18. I did prepare for this. In Matthew 18, and it starts in verse 21. And why is Jesus telling this parable? All right, so Peter, as we all know, very articulate, well-spoken, he comes to Jesus and he asks him this question. Verse 21. Peter comes to him and he says, how often, basically, should I forgive my fellow man? And he says, you know, should I forgive them 7 times? Now, I admit, 7 times is a lot of times. Chauncey, I've forgiven you so many more than 7 times. You know? Seven times a lot of times. I don't know how many of you guys have friends in your life that you've had to forgive a lot for things that they've done. But, you know, you forgive somebody for doing something once, and it's like, okay, I forgive you. Then they do the same thing again, maybe, or something else of equal or lesser value. And you're like, okay, I forgive you. Then three times. Well, the customary thing back in this day was that you gave people three times. You forgave people three times. So we haven't come that far. Three strikes and you're out. We're still the same, believe it or not. Our thought process is still the same as it was thousands of years ago. People, we don't change very much, but we don't learn from ourselves too well. So the customary thing was three times. So Peter was actually going above and beyond seven times. Seven's a holy number. It's more than twice what they're saying we should do. Jesus, I'm a good guy. Seven whole times? So Jesus, he answers the question. He says, how many times? He says, I tell you, not seven times, but 70 times seven. And some translations say 77 times. Now, I have to admit, there's a lot of people in my life. I love people. But I don't have tons of people in my life that I have to tolerate. I've kind of come to that point where, like, if I'm forgiving you 70 times 7, it's a lot. It's more than I'm ready for, maybe. I don't know. The thing is, though, that this is not just a random number that Jesus has thrown out, because 7 times 70 is 490. Fantastic, sir. 490, which is an interesting number because we find it as part of what some people would call prophecy. And 490, the years in 490, is the number of times in which you find in prophecy that finally things have been restored to complete restoration. And so Jesus is saying to Peter here, like, hey, guy, it's not about the numbers. What your goal is for everyone around you, no matter how many times they offend you, is complete restoration. That's your job. And now I'm going to tell you a parable to explain it. Before we do that, though, I know it's kind of customary that we get a few minutes to share with one another. So I don't know how deep you want to get in terms of what forgiveness looks like in your life, but I want to leave it up to you. Maybe you're going to share something like something you had to forgive or something you had to be forgiven for, or what forgiveness looks like to you, or the fact that you don't do confrontation well, so you never say a thing about forgiveness either way. Whatever it is, I just want to give that out to you for a few moments. Just let you share, like, is forgiveness difficult or is it hard? Or what are some things that maybe you're going to share that you didn't realize you were going to share at this little table today with people you don't know, and or people that you maybe don't know enough to share this with? But something about forgiveness. And so the word is forgiveness, and I leave you to talk amongst yourselves for a few moments. I don't know where you're... conversations have migrated to. We break into this little parable with forgiveness, and maybe a few of us are sharing and talking about what forgiveness means to us, or our experience with forgiveness or lack thereof, maybe our inability to forgive people, or we feel like we haven't been forgiven. I don't know what it is. So why do we break it open with money? Well, because Jesus is now going to use the concept of money to explain this idea of forgiveness. And so the two things I want to tackle this morning, and one is going to sound maybe strange to you based on what we're about to look at, but the one thing I want to tackle this morning is, what is most important to God? I think we forget what is most important to God, and by default then, what has been designed within us to be most important, that we forget. Like, not just what's most important to God, but what's actually most important to us, that we just forget. That's one thing I love about the Bible. That's one thing I like about reading into it, is it reminds me things about me. Common sense stuff that I forget on a daily basis. And if I don't recalibrate myself and remind myself of those things, I forget them. So that's the first thing. I want to talk about what's most important. The second thing is I want to talk about the disparity that we sometimes find between that iron-fisted women killing, children killing, shrubbery destroying God of the Old Testament, and a loving hippie Jesus. Why are they so different? Why do they appear to be so different when we take a look in the book? It's a reason a lot of people even question God. How could God have done this? And then how is he doing this? I admit, there are several things up on my shelf. I have a little shelf, a mental shelf, that I have questions about in relationship to God. Like, how could this be possible in a world where God is love? And so some of these things set up there in my shelf. Now, admittedly, I've had enough, I believe, experience with God that I'm okay to have questions that I don't have understanding to. Because of a lot of things, I believe I feel I get. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. But the other thing I want to tackle, at least briefly today, is why does it seem so different between the Old Testament and the New Testament? Well, Jesus starts to answer Peter's question. Peter says, how many times should I forgive? And so then he says this. He says, therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle his accounts. And so I want to give you a little tidbit. Well, first of all, Mike reminded us last week. I want to remind us again. Whenever we read the script, we want to figure out what the culture of the time was like. Because those things matter to what they're talking about. It makes it, sometimes our understanding of what's going on a lot different. And then it's like, okay, what does it tell us about God? A lot of us have questions about God, and we don't get them answered sometimes because we don't read this book in a way that we're seeking an answer to, like, the character of God and who he is and what he's about. And then, of course, the last thing is, what principle here transcends culture and transcends time and matters to me? Because, like I said before, we haven't actually changed that much. We're still very, very similar. And so here's one little thing that I want to remind you guys, a little way to interpret a parable that Jesus is talking about here. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like a king. All right, so when Jesus says the kingdom of heaven, what does he mean? The kingdom of heaven, anybody, just take a stab. Okay, an ideology. The kingdom of heaven is like this. That's not bad. Okay, maybe a government model. So we're thinking physically the kingdom of heaven, or conceptually the kingdom of heaven. Not bad answers. In fact, you could interpolate to a degree that is correct. Let's go to another example. When Jesus said that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. So what's something that is at hand? Okay, Jesus is at hand. So the kingdom of heaven is at hand. When you have something at hand, where is it? It's right here. Jesus is revealing to people, I am right here. The kingdom of heaven is Jesus. That's what it's all about. It's his life, it's his death, it's his resurrection, it's the way he was in the world both before and during and will be after. It's all about Jesus. So he says, the kingdom of heaven is like this. And what he's saying there is, he's like, I am like this. So I'm about to tell you a story about me. And so we read on, verse 24. So this king began his settlements. And a man who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. So let's do a little math for a second. We don't have to do it for very long. But does anybody know how much 10,000 talents is worth? And I'm just telling you right now, it's a truckload of money. It's actually worth, depending on the rate of gold, anywhere between $12 and $25 billion. So there are few people in the history of the earth that can understand that type of wealth. I would wager to say that even Bill Gates may not fully understand his own wealth. But 12, let's just be conservative here and say it's worth 12 billion, all right? 12 bill. I don't know how you get in debt that much. I mean, that's a ton of money. $12 billion. It's a type of money I can't understand. I can't understand being in debt that much. And so what happens here? Since he was not able to pay the master ordered that he and his wife and children and all they had be sold to repay the debt. You know, sometimes when we have a debt, we've done something that is difficult to pay back. And there's only a certain level of who we are that we can offer. Sometimes it's all we are. You know, we do things to one another. We create debt in our relationships. And sometimes it's, I don't know, the debt is overwhelming. And the only thing we have to offer is ourselves. In this situation, the master said, hey, listen, you may not have all the money, but you have you. Whatever it's worth, we'll make that trade out. And so the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. That is just a lie. I mean, that's not even close to conceivably true. Maybe well-meaning, but it is a lie. Oh, really? You're going to come with that 12 bill, huh? I mean, that's just not true at all. But whether it was true or not, the master recognized the sincerity in this person that owed him. So Jesus says, here's a story about me. I'm telling you this story about me. I'm like a king, an unpayable debt. The man falls to his feet. The servant's master, verse 27, took pity on him and canceled the debt and let him go. I mean, that's unreal. That's the kind of thing I don't personally understand. I mean, if you were like, here, Jason, here's $10. You know, hey, I'm going to go grab a meal. I forgot my wallet. Can I borrow $10? Yes, Jason, here's $10. All right, I'll pay you back tomorrow. You know what? Don't worry about it. Oh, okay. I will not worry about that $10. I get that. I'd be like, okay, $10. If you gave me $1,000, you were like, here, you need something. And then you were like, don't worry about that debt. Oh, okay. Like I can start to feel good about this. In 30 years, I get to own my home. If somebody was like, forget about that, it's already yours. I mean, like, that feels good. You know? When somebody says, forget about this debt that you owe me. We can resonate with that too sometimes when there's been something wrong between us, between the people in our lives. We say, I'm sorry. They say, I'm sorry. We embrace. We talk about it. We get it into the past, and suddenly a debt, whether it was a social or a love debt or whatever it is, the account is cleared and it feels good. It puts us in this awesome position where we're like, man, freedom. I don't owe. There's no secrets. And so here's this Jesus. I'm telling you a story about me that when you owe me even an unpayable debt, if you fall to your knees and you say, it may be unrealistic, but I'll do everything I can to pay you back. You know what he says? Forget about it. So how is this Jesus of the New Testament and the God of the Old Testament so different? So there's a story in the Old Testament that I think brings clarity to me that allowed me to take a question about God down off my shelf. Gave me the opportunity to be like, okay, here's an example where I don't have to question the value and validity of God. So these three guys, they're walking through the desert. They see the encampment of a certain Abraham. Do you guys know this story? They come up to Abraham, and he, as tradition would have it, would go out and meet them and offer them foot washing and food and care for these weary travelers, not really knowing who they are. He takes care of them. They have some dialogue about him having kids, which turned out to be kind of a big deal. And then they get ready to go, and he walks out with them, as tradition has it. The further you walk with somebody, the more honor you give them that they've come to your house. And he walks out with them. The historians say that potentially he walked with them up to 5 miles away from his home. He honored them so much. And before they left him, God says to himself, should I hide what I'm going to do from Abraham? And Abraham is there with him, and he says, hey, listen, Sodom and Gomorrah's outcry is huge. There are things going on down there that I've heard I can't live with in this world anymore. And so I'm going to go down and I'm going to destroy it. And Abraham, like many of us, says, well, what kind of God are you? I mean, there's innocent people when it comes to the destruction of the city. What did the donkeys do? What did the children do? So God's like, okay, well, I'm just telling you, I'm going to go down there myself and see what it's all about. Abraham says, well, hold on, before you go, what if there's 50 people that are righteous? Would you spare the city for those? God says, yeah, I'll spare the city for those. That makes sense. I'll spare the city. He's like, okay, good. One second. How about 40? Sure. I'll do it for 40. I realize I don't know if you're in a negotiation, Lord, but how about 30? Sure, I will do it for 30. And they have this little discourse until he says, okay, how about 10? Will you save all of the city for 10 righteous people? God says, I absolutely will save the city for 10 righteous people. And so the men carry on their way. Here's one thing that we can, I think, learn about Abraham's culture and about the person that he is. You can't always change people's behavior, but you can care about their salvation. You can be worried about them. You can plead for them. You can argue with God on behalf of others, even if there's not a whole lot you can do about it. Abraham gives us an example of this. So these two men, they go down. These two representatives of heaven, they go down, and Lot meets them at the city. And he greets them like he would maybe any stranger, and he says, hey, what are you guys up to? And they say, oh, we're just come to hang out in the city, see what's going on here. Where will you be staying tonight? We're going to stay in the town square. No. You can't stay in the town square. You can't. You have to come to my house. They were very hospitable people, but also he recognized the town square is not safe here. You can't stay in there. Please come. And so with some urging, they said, okay, we'll come stay with you. Well, at some point in the evening, the town had gotten the message that there were visitors here. And so a couple different translations. My translation says all of the men of the city, both from the youngest to the oldest, showed up at Lot's door. And then another translation says all of the people of the city showed up. Lot came out to speak to them. We'll keep it mostly a family show here. But the men of the city said, give us your guests. We have an agenda that we want to carry out with them. That will likely mean their death. And Lot says, no. You can't have these people. And they threaten him. They say, Lot, if you don't give us these men, we will do worse to you than we're going to do to them. And then Lot says something unspeakable. And this is where I think it's important for us to understand cultures and times and even ourselves. Lot does and says something unspeakable that, to me, for many years confirmed this misogynistic men rule the world view in the Bible. Lot says, well, how about my daughters? Why don't you take them instead? And I think to myself, what? What kind of story is this? What are we learning here? A horror story, absolutely. I saw a movie not too long ago that brought some relevance to it. You guys, maybe some of you saw this movie called Lone Survivor. Right? There's four military guys, three of them get killed, one of them, I guess wounded or whatever, makes his way down into a village stationed near where the Taliban are fighting. The Taliban are looking for this man. He makes his way into this village, and this village is not a portion of the Taliban. They're a peaceful village. They find this guy. They give him care. They take personal risk. They know that in doing so, their whole village and family will be in danger of death. And in fact, to this day, that village still has to fight for their life against the Taliban because of the kindness they showed their guest. See, we haven't changed in very many years. Even back then, it was so important to them that if you had a guest in your home, it did not matter what the cost was, they were your number one priority. Whether it was the death of yourself or your family, as heinous as that sounds, the responsibility fell on you to take care of them. And now I recognize this wasn't just some frivolous thing. This was ingrained in the culture of these people that when somebody is under your protection, it literally is over your dead body before you mess with them. I'm like, oh, well, that makes a little more sense. I don't have to like it, because guess what? When you bring sin into the world, there is no beautiful answer. But it does give me a little bit of an understanding. So what happens then? The men of the city are blinded. The two guests, they tell Lot, hey, you got to get out of here. Get all the people you love. All of the righteous people have to leave with you now. And unfortunately, not 10 were found. Not even the family of Lot that had married in, the brother-in-laws, were not ready to go. Which gives me another bit of understanding to the God of the Old Testament. See, Abraham had this argument with God, this thing back and forth with God, where God was able to say to him, like, hey, I've done the research. And sin is a cancer that eats everything it touches. I realize you would have wanted me to save it for 50, and I would have. I would have saved it for 10, but guess what? I know the value of this city. And they have come to the point where even visitors are not safe to walk in. Now, I would wager to you that is an application that we could easily apply to ourselves, to our homes, and to our churches, to our places of business, to our schools, wherever we find ourselves. We have to ask ourselves, would it be better for us to be annihilated because we have become the type of people where it's dangerous for visitors to interact with us? Where visitors are no longer safe? That's a real question, I think. I think it's worth asking and definitely worth answering. And if the answer is not positive, it's definitely worth making some changes. So we find a God that has done his research. He's not just out there destroying women and men and children and anybody in the wake. He's done his research. And we get to see at least a picture of a dialogue where if we could have that dialogue in every scenario where we might have questions, we can say to ourselves, you know what? God is not just this wieldy God just throwing around lightning bolts and doing things without thought and understanding. And so unfortunately, Sodom, they were wiped out. They had become the kind of place where they were a cancer to the outside world. And no one was safe there anymore. So why, though, that type of destruction in comparison to this $12 billion forgiveness? It's a lot of forgiveness. Was there no forgiveness for Sodom? Could it not have been that Sodom would be forgiven? Well, here in Matthew, there's a little more to this parable, just a tiny little bit more. It says this, but when the servant went out after he had received this forgiveness, he found his fellow servant who owed him 100 denarii. Now, I did some math, and depending on the exchange rate, and this is a big range, could be as low as $400 up to $20,000. Now, that is a big range. But this guy owed his fellow man some sum of money. His fellow servant found one who owed him 100 denarii. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. And his fellow servant fell to his knees. I don't know if this looks familiar. He begged him, be patient with me, and I will pay you back. Now, guess what? That's probably true. I mean, this guy could have come up with the debt. What if it was $400? He could have come up with money to pay his fellow man back. That's true. Give me time. I will get you every penny. That could have happened, right? 12 bill? Don't even try it. 400? Absolutely. 20 grand? Yeah, probably. So how does this guy respond? But he refused. Instead, he went off and had that man thrown where? Into jail, into prison, until he could pay back his debt. And this is one thing that I think we have to learn about ourselves. That makes no sense. He decided that to get his debt repaid, he would put this person in the one place where it was impossible for him to pay it back. And you know, we do that with one another. Oh, we offend one another. We say things in ignorance, even well-meaning, where we hurt one another. We do things in marriage. We sometimes do things as business partners. And we create debt sometimes, relationship debt. And sometimes people want to be sorry. Like, they want to make it right. And what do? We put them in the one spot where it can never be made better. We're so stupid. And yet we haven't changed for hundreds and hundreds of years. This is a parable that relates to people. People back then and people now. Well, guess what? There's a group of people who were willing to say something. When the other servants, verse 31, when the other servants saw what happened, they were greatly distressed and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called that servant in. Now, I know, we are often too involved in other people's business. We tell things, we share things, we put our nose into stuff. But I would wager to say that too few of us say something when we see injustice. When we see a spot where somebody is taking just downright advantage of other people and doing things that are just destructive to the world around them, we don't say enough. So these people were willing to do it. Then the master called the original servant in, and suddenly there's this difference. Remember, Jesus says, here's a story about me. I'm this guy right here. And then he says this, "You wicked servant, I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have done the same thing and showed mercy on your fellow servant as I did for you?" In anger, the master turned him over to the jailers to be, anyone, this is the part we don't like to read, to be tortured until he should pay back what he owed. "This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart." And so I recognize that there is no disparity between the Old Testament and the New Testament in terms of God. They are the same people. And what this same God is willing to do is he says, you know what? I am so willing to start over each and every time you ask. But the second you become a cancer to the people around you, the second you become a person that is not interested in reconciliation, complete reconciliation with everybody you know and work with and see and talk to and are around, the second you turn on your fellow man, I am done with you. That's how this works. If it's an offense against me, we'll start over every time. But my request to you, my demand of you, is that you be people of complete reconciliation. And that's the thing about this. We find out what is most important to God. There's other things that are important to God. I mean, you don't list them if they're not on the list, right? You've heard this before, like, the last thing I would ever want to do is hurt you, but it's still on the list. Okay? There is a list, right? And this is the most important thing on the list. There's other things that have been listed. Oh, understanding the state of the dead? Sure. Don't mention it if it's not important. Understanding the Sabbath? Absolutely. Don't mention it if it's not important. There are other things on the list. But what is the most important to God? The most important is how we treat one another, how we care for one another, how we forgive one another. And it makes us realize that if you really want to tick God off, you just become the kind of person that turns on their fellow man. In the Old Testament and in the New Testament, you see the same picture. And so I just implore us, take a look at these little parables and figure out what they say about God. And in this one, I kind of think that it reminds us that the most important thing is how we treat one another. Heavenly Father, help us to believe our beliefs and doubt our doubts when it comes to you. I think you've proven over and over again that you're a God that cares so much, that your number one priority is love. Love for us, and then in turn, that we love one another. I thank you for the words in the script that remind us details about ourselves that we otherwise forget if we don't take the time to be reminded. And I ask as we go out this morning, you'd help us to remember that the number one most important thing to you is how we treat one another. And that you've created us with a spirit that makes it number one to us if we would focus on it, if we would be real about it, and from our hearts, if we would care to have full reconciliation with people. We love you, Lord. In your name, amen.